had to postpone the discussion this morning regarding CMAS, and so we are now reconstituted with the CMAS discussion. Commissioner?
Thank you very much. This item is brought to you again. What we try to bring back to you is two options beside the original one that we presented, as we feel we're required by law to set cut scores, and that's your responsibility as a board. We've tried to give you some options here for discussion today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Joyce Sikorski.
Thank you.
Joyce?
Madam Chair, I've had some opportunity to think since earlier today, and before we jump into what the options are, I want to take this opportunity to talk briefly, I promise briefly, about norm reference testing versus criterion reference testing. So when we have a criterion reference test, we are assessing against a set of expectations, a set of content standards, and a set of performance levels. What we're looking at is what kids know and are able to do against those pre-established standards, those pre-established expectations. When I have a criterion reference test, I can score that test based on a single kid because I am scoring that student against those content standards, not against any other kid. For a norm reference test, we are assessing students against how other students perform. So the score I get is dependent upon the other students who actually test that day. It is not connected directly back to a content-based decision. It's a distribution of scores. So in the end, with just a percentile rank, I cannot answer the question of what it is that the student can and cannot do. As a matter of fact, I could have a test where just about all of my students really actually do meet the expectations, and yet there will be some students who score at the second percentile. Or I can have a test where none of the students meet the expectations, what we actually want our third graders to be able to do, and yet there will be students who are scoring at the 98th percentile. It's a ranking system. Kids who know the least to kids who know the most, but there's not a connection back to the standards. Both our state law and our federal law and those systems are based on the premise that we will have a criterion-based system. Okay, something that is generated off of the standards, which is why we started first with the content standards, then developed those performance levels, and now we're trying to establish cut scores based on those performance levels that's based on the content. It's a content-based decision. If we were going to establish scores that were based on more of a norm reference system, what would happen is that rather than pre-establishing what it is that we expect kids to know and be able to do and measuring the kids against those expectations, we would actually be setting the standards. What do we want kids to be able to know and do based on actual performance? It would be the exact opposite of what the system is set up to do. When we're looking at standard setting expectations and score requirements, again, under both state and ESEA, there's reference to being consistent with relevant nationally recognized professional and technical standards, having adequate technical quality, and meeting the requirements under the law. We have to report out on performance levels. We have to have those performance levels be reflective of proficiency. The results have to include scores that are aligned to the standards. They must include performance levels. They cannot just be raw scores, scale scores, percentiles, things like that. The school and the district reports that are generated have to reflect those performance levels as well, one of which has to reflect what we mean by proficient. So when we're looking at normative data or descriptive data, what role does that play? In the generation of our individual student reports, took very much to heart the concept of we are moving to brand new standards that, frankly, schools and districts are in the process of implementing, and it's new to students. And we knew from the criterion-based perspective what the standards were asking our students to know and be able to do, it was going to be tough. So we wanted to provide additional information that would allow folks to also ask questions of, okay, so my student may not know everything that they're supposed to know according to the standards, but how do they compare to other kids, to other schools, to other districts? You had in your packet two sample reports, and we had been requested to bring those reports with us today. And when we look at those reports, I want to point out where we're talking about the kind of a criterion-based system versus where we're talking about where you can make some of those other comparisons to other students. So at the top of the report, what we have is, obviously this is a content area for science, there's a scale score. The scale score is what allows us to compare performance from 1 year to the next year. So here we have a scale score of 573 that has been assigned to a performance level, and it's of moderate command. The student's diamond is at the top. It's the big diamond. And when we look at that student's diamond, yes, it is sitting at that moderate command level. When we compare that student's performance to the student's school and district, that student is actually a high performer, right? They're doing better than the average for that school or district. But when we compare that to the state, the student is not doing as well as the state as a whole is. And again, that's one of the purposes of the state assessment, is to be able to look outside of just your community and have a broader perspective. So again, this student has a moderate command of the standards. The student is doing better than the school or district on average, but the student is not doing as well as the state on average. We then break that score down into subscales. And for science, we have physical science, life science, earth system science, and then scientific investigation and the nature of science. For social studies, we have history, geography, economics, and civics. With this, we can start to look at a deeper level in terms of how the student is performing. And when we look at physical science, again, the student is performing better than the average for the school or the district. When we look at life science, the student is performing slightly better. When we look at earth systems, slightly worse. And when we look at scientific investigation, that does appear to be a strength area for this particular student. As a teacher, I'm going to be especially concerned about the earth systems piece, right? Why is my student not performing as well on that area as the other areas? Why is my student not performing as well as his or her peers within the school, within the district? When I look at the next part of the report where we see the earth systems breakout, we have the grade level expectations, and we can see that the student, again, is at the top. Then we have district average. Then we have state average. And where we see the biggest difference is actually in GLE2, which deals with the Earth's surface changes constantly through a variety of processes and forces. So we've narrowed down what it is that this particular student seems to be struggling with. The student, in terms of weather, is solid. Right, the student's actually doing better than his or her peers within the district and is even doing better than the state average. Again, all of this is comparison of student to student, something which I've heard referenced to from this group before, wanting more of that, less of the reference back to the criterion. We also have the scores broken up into what we refer to as selected response. In the olden days, those would be multiple choice. They look slightly different in a technology-enhanced world, but for our purposes, we can consider those multiple choice. And then constructed response. And those are the items where students actually have to create their own response. They're not just selecting. They have to actually write it out. And when we look at the student is performing pretty consistently with the school and the district on the selected response, a little bit below where the state is. When we look at constructed response, the student is actually outperforming the average for that school, for that district, but is still a little bit below the state. This report is actually an example from fifth grade, because fifth grade already has the approved cut scores, so we were able to complete the reports by having this very first part where we have it split into the four performance levels. And what we are asking for you to do moving forward at some point is to give us cut scores so we know where to place those four levels. The rest of the reports are done. We also know that when we were going through the standard setting process, we did also look at student performance. It was not done in isolation. Our standard setters very much came from the perspective of content, right? What do the standards demand? But we did share with them what performance looked like, how many students got the items correct. We did share with them distribution, and we asked them to explain the distribution, anything that was different than what they would have expected based on their own experience. The standard setters, as they indicated back in March, felt that actually where those cut scores fell and what that distribution looked like was matching their experience within the schools and the districts. We've been asked whether or not there are other standard setting options. Again, we're coming from the perspective of a criterion-based system. I did provide for you in your packet, I think, a description of a couple of the other models. So, yes, we used bookmarking. We could have used ANGOFF. We could have used a modified ANGOFF. But in the end, they're all content-based, and they all, in part, are dependent upon expert opinion, educators' opinion. And there's no reason to expect that had we followed one of those, we would have necessarily ended up with results that looked very different from what we actually have. Again, it's the standards that are driving where these cut scores are. After the March meeting, we did consult with some of our national experts about what our options might be in order to meet your wants as well as still be technically sound in the end, because we know that we want to have a technically sound system, both for our state purposes, for our federal purposes, and just good practice. They again affirmed that we had followed a technically sound and nationally recognized process. Okay, this is not something that we just made up. It is technically sound, nationally recognized. But they did agree that there was some room to adjust the cut points, but we would still be able to defend from a technical perspective. And that was our goal, to be able to make an adjustment, but also be able to defend from that technical perspective. You have those adjusted cut scores in your packet. They are not radically different. We look at the March recommendation, and we had about 19% of our students who were scoring at strong and distinguished. If we would make an adjustment just to the strong cut, which is one of the options that we have, we would have about 25% of our students in strong and distinguished. That stays the same for option C. But what happens with option C is we also adjust the moderate cut, and so we have fewer students in the limited category. So with our option C, we have 29% of our students in the limited category. Under the March recommendation, there was 29%. This is for science. For social studies, we had approximately 10% of our students in March scoring at the strong and distinguished mark. With an adjustment just to the strong cut, we have 16%, a split of 15 and 1. And then if we adjust all levels, that actually shifts to 14 and 2. And again, we see a decrease in the students in the limited area, dropping from 44 to 36%. Do we have some external markers to gauge the reasonableness of these cuts? Back at the March meeting, Mr. Durham asked, what about AP? What about those advanced placement courses? And at that time, I did not have those numbers off the top of my head. We do know that in Colorado, we have about 14% of our graduates who earn a 3 or higher on a history or social science assessment. For college credit, students need to earn a 4 or more. Okay, so that 3 does not get a student college credit. But again, that's about 14%, pretty consistent with what we have here at 16%. When we looked at the science advanced placement, we had about 7% of our graduates earning a 3 or higher on a science assessment. Keep in mind, for both social studies and science under advanced placement, there are a variety of tests. They're not comprehensive, so students can take just biology or just chemistry. Also, we know that within the last month, NAEP released their 8th grade U.S. history results, and 18% of students scored at proficient or above. Again, it's a different grade level, but it is an external marker to just kind of give us a gauge in terms of, is this kind of falling within the realm of what we would expect? And it's not radically different. And we know that these scores, especially the social studies, come more in line with what we saw with elementary and middle school. So, questions?
Deb?
Thank you. So can you just tell me if this sequence is right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the cut scores are problematic in my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it right that we, of course, develop language that represents the standards in Colorado for social studies and science? That language exists on our websites. Then performance level indicators were identified as subsets or distillations of all that language, because when we pull up that language, it's voluminous. We could read any one of those bullets and kind of walk away asking ourselves, what did it say again? Right? I mean, because the when one thinks of standards, one often thinks of very targeted, succinct, detailed language with verbs that are descriptive. And when you pull up our standards, as many standards, one has a hard time landing on the verb that says, what exactly does this mean? But nonetheless, we have that language. Then the performance level indicators are sort of a distillation of that language that creates the weights of how many items are aligned with that content. Then the next step is to develop items that link to the performance level indicators and the standards. Then the next step is to get kids to respond to those items with varying levels of proficiencies. Then the next step is to create rubrics that groups of people would sit down and superimpose on levels of responses on those items. And then the next step is to get focus groups or groups or whatever we're calling them to sit down and say, yes, this kind of a response looks like it represents distinguished. This kind of a response looks like it represents strong. Now we will align the scoring of those items across thousands of kids with that sequence. And so if I'm correct in that sequence, or roughly so, then I guess my feeling is when you're ending up with 1 and 2% of students performing at a distinguished level, it strikes me as an artifact of all the people that did the work. So can you respond to that?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I make a couple of clarifications about the process that you outlined first? So you're absolutely right that we start with the standards. And the science and social studies standards were adopted in December of 2009. And keep in mind that those are Colorado, right? We're not dealing with any external issues when it comes to these two tests. You're right that we then also develop what I'm going to refer to as performance level descriptors. And what that does is that takes those standards and it breaks it up into different levels. So we have our limited command, our moderate command, our strong command, and our distinguished command, right? So we're going to break up whether we have a student who is performing at kind of like the entry level for that standard area, is approaching what we would call kind of proficient, whether we've crossed the bar, we're strong, or whether we're at that distinguished level. When it comes to, sorry.
When I reread the performance level descriptors that are mm-hmm. kind of a distillation of the voluminous language in the standards, I can't recall if the board voted on that language. I know that when I looked at it, I thought, and I remember talking with Jill at the time and asking, where did this language come from again? Who wrote it? Who created these bulleted items that are supposed to be a distillation of that larger body of work? And did we vote on that or did we just review it? I don't remember voting on it.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'll answer that question, then I want to jump back to one other thing. Okay. The performance level descriptors are actually one of the things that you're voting, well, you're being asked to vote on, and they're joined with those cut scores.
Okay.
In terms of the items are actually, I would suggest, written back to our evidence outcomes that are coming out of our standards rather than coming straight off of the performance level descriptors. So just a slight adjustment there in terms of how far have we journeyed.
Except that, the performance level descriptors, though, are written based on distinguished, strong, moderate, limited,
yes.
So they have a huge impact on those cut scores.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's what those performance level descriptors are supposed to do. They are supposed to help us orient and gain an understanding of what it is that our students know in terms of those skills and concepts that are represented in the standards and be able to separate. Madam Chair, that is what you're being asked to take into consideration today and what you were asked to take into consideration as well as in March. Another piece that I would just like to clarify is that when it comes to scoring our constructed responses, they are not scored from the perspective of limited, moderate, strong, distinguished. That only applies to a total test level. And so we have some items that are worth 2 points. So there's a 0, 1, and 2, but there's not a direct correlation to these performance levels. And I just have to clarify because people get confused about that sometimes, thinking that the performance levels are applied at that item level for that scoring, and it's not.
I'm going to a very rudimentary level because I went through a master's program that was competency-based, and you either were performing, you were competent, or you were not competent. And I went through 2 years where the professors, it was just like this. They were creating the program, so I went through courses where I didn't even get a score because they hadn't decided what that rubric or what would look like. It was very anxiety producing. So, as an example, in one course, which was science education, the end what I had to do was create a machine that worked for 3 minutes. It was a machine that moved and flew. I just don't see how we have gotten from that to this, where you either are or you're not. I can understand that, but these levels that are, I think, I don't even remember that in theory. What theory, as far as, I just don't know that theory, and I really have kept up in this area. I even went to Mexico and helped the department, the Mexican Department of Education with their states to develop programs in competency-based education. And my description is what I just described. And it didn't have this ABC. We were trying to get away from ABC, D, and F, which is basically what you have in, if you gave these descriptors, you could actually say that level up above is an A, and then a B, and then a C, and then a D, and an F. There are five levels.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
So as we're looking at this concept of competency, and if you would take what you had, which was essentially a two kind of level approach, right? It was you're either are or you're not. Right. What has happened with most state assessments is we have said not only do we want to be able to distinguish the kids who have it from the kids who don't have it, but we want to be able to distinguish those kids who have really excelled from those kids who have it. And we want to be able to distinguish those kids who really are extremely struggling from those kids who are approaching competency. So if we were going to look at, as an example, and you just have like kind of like one item in life with your example, but you could have built a machine that flew but it didn't run. I think you said it had to kind of run and fly. I don't know. But you could have done one but not both. And you could have had somebody who frankly at the start did not have a clue as to how to even get gears working versus somebody else who could get the gears working, and you want to be able to distinguish those. So what we can do on the state assessment is reliably kind of put kids into four different categories, with three being I've crossed that line into competence, but I can also then distinguish my kids who really, really are excelling. And then I have my kids who are below that line of competence, right. but be able to distinguish my kids who are just at the emerging level from people who are approaching.
I have another question that's
sure
related.
One?
Yes, it's related. So what happens to those kids? Do they retake that the teacher reteaches in a different manner the material that was not? So what happens? They just don't pass? And how is that going to work?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
In Colorado, we do not have our tests as high stakes for students, meaning we do not have requirements that our students have to pass the state test in order to, like, graduate. In some states, they do, right? You cannot graduate unless you pass the state test. We don't have that in Colorado. We're not high stakes for students.
We are high stakes. We're high stakes for teachers.
I said,
wait. I'm sorry. You're dominating the conversation. No one has the right to do that.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And that's why I said we are not high stakes for students, right? The students, their graduation is not dependent upon whether or not they pass the test. Will the state assessments be used down the road for purposes of educator effectiveness? The intent is for the state assessments to be used for purposes of educator effectiveness down the road. Is that happening this year? It's not happening this year.
Yeah, I would just add to that. You've got a room full of students, all of whom have parents, who want to know how their children are doing. How, you know, you need to be able to give them some explanations, which is what you're looking at there. It seems like we go through different stages in education where, gee, we don't want any grades because they might feel bad or they're not, I appreciate what you're doing anyway. So go ahead, please, unless anyone else has questions.
There's questions over here.
Let Angelica go.
Yeah, let's get Angelica and Jane in.
So if you want an example of high stakes for students, kind of high, the AP test, which also has, what, 5 different levels?
But we're talking about the park.
No, wait a minute. We're not talking about the park. We're talking about the CMAS.
We're not talking about the park.
What we are talking about is how criterion reference exams are scored. So you've got 5 on the AP. I don't know about the IB. The NAEP seems to me to be identical, and in fact, it goes right along. I mean, the scores are right in alignment with the scores we're having here. So
but
a plus.
But I'm concerned.
What you're talking about is a pass.
The question I asked before was, what about we want those kids to get that knowledge, to have that knowledge. It's not about, it doesn't matter because, you know, so we get a template or we have an assessment that says these kids do not know that knowledge. So what are we going to do? Because it's important to me, and I think it's important to parents, that kids have that knowledge.
Agreed, but you're talking about what we do with the scores, and we are just trying to get to scores.
You're talking about a test. I'm talking about content and knowledge. I'm sorry. You are still keeping to that test. And I'm talking about there's a body of knowledge to know. There's content to know.
Right.
And I want those kids, even if they fail that test, to retake that course, to have teachers
reteach. No disagreement with you. Well, what we're talking about,
that's the importance of education and learning. That's what it's about.
And that's the next step after you after a kid finds out where he or she lands on an assessment, then we've got a job to do. But we can't even get there, and by not giving any kind of feedback to the kids.
Yeah, we could give them the score.
You know this?
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Jane?
The tests that were given last fall, what grades were those again? 7th?
Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Yes.
The tests that were given in the fall were actually given to the 12th graders, so they were pretty much a culminating assessment.
What's been released?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We have released the elementary and middle school science and social studies. We did that last fall.
That's what I thought there was just at lower grade levels that people had seen the results. I've seen, now we've all seen an exemplar or a sample of what one of those reports might look like that would go home to a parent. What I can't remember right now is there a score on there where literally, I can't remember, some number of points out of a certain maximum number of points. And then in addition to that, there is the diagram type structure that shows where along the scale of proficiency, if we're still calling that, actually it's competency.
Madam, sorry.
Are parents seeing that? And then the second part of that, I know they are, but so the second part is, has there been any feedback, direct comment, feedback, questions, the good, the bad, and the ugly, about what parents and families and teachers, for that matter, are learning from that information? What kind of conclusions are they drawing? And to me, that's where the teaching and learning and instruction part of this kicks in. Mm-hmm. It's also purely achievement level. And whether you want to call that a raw score or a competency, used to that level, that's, to me, it's all the same thing. However people are talking about this and what their own learning, how they express their own learning, conclusions, observations, to me, that's what we have to keep focused on, regardless of when we send these scores out or not. And I do agree. People want to know. No matter how many people did not participate in these tests, I think, because I've talked to them, families, kids, teachers, outright question, do you want to know how you did, at least? Of course.
Deb?
So my question, I'm questioning the underlying assumptions of the way these cut scores are set. So your point, Jane, do people deserve to know something about how they did? Yes. But my problem is the underlying assumptions have not been exposed, so that I'm concerned people get these reports and they assume that they're right. My child has low moderate command, and my concern is, let me just rerun one example of the performance level descriptors. If you're distinguished, you can analyze the interconnectedness of the world, including how the movement of people, goods, and ideas can enrich cultures or create tensions, and how the uneven distribution of resources can lead to conflict, competition, or cooperation. So apparently, if you can do that, according to what? A rubric according to a group of people that sat down and said this is the way that analysis has to look to be distinguished, and then you're going to distill it into a report like that that people are going to take away, teachers, parents, kids, and say, I need to do X, Y, and Z better or worse. You know, in other words, I feel the underlying assumptions are off determining how these cut scores are set. So I'm all about talking about a positive result here. How can we give feedback to the field? But if we do it based on this approach, I think there are so many nested assumptions in these cut scores that nobody understands, that it will lead to actions that people may not have anticipated and, again, don't understand.
That could be very true, but isn't that something that happens all the time?
To this extent, not the way this is.
And how would you suggest we reach these scores?
That's what I'm saying. I think that's our next, that discussion we need to be having. How can we give feedback to the field without doing it this way with these assumptions that have not been critically analyzed, that have not been socialized with the public so that they know what those scores mean? That, to me, is the problem.
And what would you suggest, and I'm sorry, but we have this good conversation.
You have a curriculum.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
What do we do, Deb? What do we do in the meantime? You know, school's going on. Teachers are giving assessments. They're
That's
giving
why
grades.
I'm asking, what
what
are
do
our
we
options?
Do about that?
Can we give raw scores, mean scores, ranges? I mean, can we give some other type of feedback that doesn't have so many nested assumptions that have not been socialized with parents or teachers or kids, so that they'll get that report and they don't know what it means?
I don't know. I don't want to harm the ongoing people in the classroom now that are giving these kind of things. I don't want to say
my concern is that we do more harm in releasing this information where the assumptions haven't been critically analyzed.
And I'm not arguing with you. I understand. But what do we do right now? What do we do for the people in the classroom right now? How do they determine whether their students are making the grade or not making the grade? And how do they report to parents, and how do they report to kids if we don't have any cut scores?
I'm asking for us to discuss, that's why we're discussing it. What are our options? What kind of data could we provide?
This might be a long, long, long discussion. I'm giving us time. We don't have time for a huge, long discussion. Go ahead, Angelica.
So I'm going to suggest, Deb, that when teachers get this feedback, I don't think they're going to be confused, because we went through a two-year process to develop these standards, and they have been adopting curriculum to in order to implement that. I am going to totally agree with you that we have got a communication piece to do, because much as this is interesting, mm-hmm. it is like way over my head. And I'm familiar with some of this terminology, and it still is really hard. So I completely agree with you that we really need to, in our reporting, be able to speak to this. For me, it has to have some examples. You know, a rubric for me means something when it actually has a particular issue and there are examples of what is at which level. So I'm going to agree with you on that part, that we've got to do some serious communicating, because the expectations that we have today for kids are different from the expectations that we had experienced as students ourselves.
And the teachers haven't read these performance no. level descriptors.
Oh, yes, they have. Oh, yes, they have.
What the various levels are.
Yes,
we
they have.
Even voted on
it. Well, there's so much of that in the standards. It's
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
So, and again, I think when we were here in August, the educator tried to address this. And he articulated that, at least from his perspective, that there was a pretty clear link between those performance level descriptors and the standards, so that those folks who are teaching social studies, they seem to be able to look at that and say, I understand how this is building. I know how to make sense of this. I agree that, is that everywhere at this point in the state? It's not. But I'm not sure it's going to get everywhere in the state until we actually put results out there and they're actually linked back to those performance level descriptors. One other thing that I do want to mention, too, is that our expectation is that we will continue to release items that have not just the item and not just the correct answer, but also will have what the performance looked like on that item. So what percentage of kids actually got that right? And when it comes to the constructed response, what did a zero look like compared to what a two looked like? How do we start to understand what a two performance is on some of our constructed response items? And again, at this point, we've had about 300 Colorado educators who have been involved in this process. There's a whole bunch more, but we have to get the information out there in order for it to be used.
It just a thought. Is it possible for us to, because it seems like what you're combining here in these reports is criterion reference and norm reference, mm-hmm. right? You're doing comparisons as well as to what extent a student approaches a criterion. Right? So for us to circulate norm referenced type information wouldn't be incompatible with the system that we have set up.
Madam Chair. So I think I heard
mean scores.
So when we are looking up here at this table, which is the top table on the reports that you have, those littler diamonds represent the mean score for the school, the mean score for the district, and the mean score for the state. So we were very much coming from that perspective of, can we provide some more descriptive statistics that folks might be able to understand? And when we shared this with parents, and I agree with you that when we talk about parents, there's a wide variety of parents, and there's a wide variety of parents in terms of what kind of information they want to have. And these reports, you can stop here, or you can continue to dive more deeply. But what the parents were able to understand is, I'm going to look at where my child's diamond is. I'm going to look to see which performance level. That's going to give me the gauge in terms of how well we're meeting the expectation of the standards. But then I'm also going to look, and if my child's diamond is to the right, I know my kid did better. If my child's diamond is to the left, my child didn't do as well as. So I think, and again, I'm not saying that we went as far as you may have liked us to, but we tried to address some of those concerns about, give me some other comparative information on these reports that goes beyond just the standards that we're all trying to learn.
So just a follow-up, and then I'll...
Yes.
So my only thought would be, would it make sense for, as we're struggling with this, to release mean and average scores, ranges, some descriptive type information, mm-hmm. give mm-hmm. folks a sense of how they're mm-hmm. doing, relatively speaking, and not the cut scores, while we examine the underlying assumptions.
At this point, Madam Chair, that does not meet state or federal statute.
What's wrong with doing it and doing both, Deb?
May I just say?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I want to get it kind of down to the children and what they're learning. And Denver Public Schools came out and said they didn't have material for K through 3. They don't have material. We have to listen to what these experts who came to us last week and said that it was an evolving test. And, it just so evolving that we can't really...
All right.
Really discuss we're doing cut scores when people
we need
don't
to we need
it.
To wrap this up because we don't have all day. What did you say, Commissioner?
Well,
you didn't. Okay, I have a motion. You have sent. I will let you speak since you're the only one who hasn't.
Good.
I
have a number of questions, just kind of basics.
Well, if you've got a number of questions, let me speak first because we do have a very limited amount of time. Obviously, we're not going to come to a conclusion here. And
we need to.
I have a motion here that I could use to table this. And I think at this late hour of the day with tempers fraying and probably not a solution in sight unless we
tempers.
Want to.
We're excited.
Would you not do that
I'm
to
sorry.
Me, please? I think that it probably would be, I would advise that we table it and come back to it because 4:30 in the afternoon, I don't think we're all up to it. But if you make it brief, okay?
Yeah, I do have just a couple of questions. One is, where currently who holds the data for the individual students? Is it held in this department? Is it held by the districts who administered the test? Who holds the data?
Madam,
who would produce these reports?
Madam Chair. So once the reports are produced, that data will be at the school district and state level.
Who holds it now? The school districts don't have it?
Madam Chair, the school districts do not have this data now because we can't fill in this field of what ultimately is the student's performance level. So there's a hole in the data at this point in time.
Okay, so then... As I understand it, this data cannot be used for teacher accountability under the statute that just passed.
Correct.
That it can't be used for district accreditation under the standard that just passed. Is that correct?
I believe it's possibly for the first.
You're correct.
Yeah.
You got it.
And yes for the second. I think it's permissive under the teacher.
But it's not state required,
no.
And so if released, would provide some information to individual student on their performance. That's the one thing it would do, and I think the most compelling argument that the chair made is that students, some of whom at least, may be interested in this data, although given the number who didn't take the test, that may not be as large as we think. Secondly, the comments that we'd be out of compliance with state and federal law, I'd just like to make one comment. The legislature cannot compel any member of this board to cast a vote any way that they don't want to, number one. If, in fact, this board decides not to release these scores, there is no penalty that accrues to any one individual or to the board for that matter, and if somebody wants the scores released, their option is to go to court and have the court release them since we failed to do it, and it gives us a chance to make a legal case about whether they're valid or not. So I'm not too worried about that. But I do think that...
You're not worried about not releasing the scores?
I don't think there's... I think the biggest damage comes from individual students who took the test and are in fact interested in the results.
Well, yeah.
I think that's the problem. So, you know, I'd hope we might be able to come to some sort of compromise on this, but the more I hear, I guess the less likely I am to compromise, because I keep falling back into the mode that these could very well be designed to create a crisis in education for the purposes, for political purposes, with which I don't happen to agree. But taking that out of it, I'm certainly willing to go along with the motion to table, but I think we ought to have, I really think we ought to have enough time to discuss whether we could release this for some purposes and not others, that is, not for district comparisons from district to district, but for only released on an individual basis to individual students, so that it wouldn't affect teacher accountability, it wouldn't affect district accreditation. In fact, the press would not have the opportunity to make those comparisons because that data wouldn't exist to be able to compare Cherry Creek to Cheyenne Mountain, for example. And we might be able to do some of those things and minimize the press damage, which is going to be that, you know, Colorado students and teachers are all failures, which is going to be the headline when this data is released, and we have a crisis. So,
but we also have the crisis when they say the state board refused to release this information, well, and then there's going to be a second crisis.
Well, I don't happen to believe that's a crisis, because if the information, if the majority of this board believes that the information is inaccurate in some fashion, that's our position, and I think it's a defensible one, and I think Dr. Scheffel made a pretty good prima facie case, at least, that there are questions about the data. So can we get a long enough discussion at some point to see if we can work out some compromise based on for what purpose it might be released, in what format it might be released, to whom it might be released, and we can maybe deal with the simplest part. And one last question is, if we set this as the cut score, is it only for this year and only for this? And does this carry through in any way for the future?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Cut scores can be evaluated on an ongoing basis. Typically, you don't change them year after year after year, because that eliminates the ability to really evaluate whether or not there are changes within your system. But I would encourage us, especially given the circumstances that we experienced this fall, that we have a clear plan for doing ongoing investigation about whether or not these scores are indeed at the right spot. And I would love to be able to see how students perform without what I'll call all the extra noise.
Well, I'll just make one final closing comment then. I think in all the debate that went on at the Capitol, one thing became very clear, and that the group that has no stake in this, at least a stake that they can perceive, are the students. And they are opting out at the senior level. They voted with their feet. They don't believe, at least, they have a huge stake in this. It's quite clear the teachers don't think they have a huge stake in this, or that they do have a huge stake and that it's improperly applied. Parents, I think, really don't know at this point in time how to evaluate this because of, I think, the noise in the system, which, you know, how we got here is going to be a fun debate. But I think we need to set aside enough time to see if we can work through some compromise for some release of some of the data. But I think a full release, even with these modified levels, I'm still not willing to vote for.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Durham, that's a question maybe you can answer. I don't know how we can. I don't know right now, and that's something we'd have to get back with, how we can parcel it out. Okay, that's something I don't know if that's possible, but that's something if you want, we'll get back. Because the system,
come on,
how it's designed. Okay,
Madam Chair.
Okay.
And respectfully, I'm willing to look at all kinds of different options and take into consideration all of your suggestions. There is a little bit of a conflict between what I'm hearing on this side, which is please be sure to give us the comparisons of the student against school, against district, against state for that comparison purposes, and then saying we won't release it. I just want to be upfront about that, that almost by default, even if we would somehow say we're only releasing the individual student reports, by default, there's school data and there's district data.
Okay.
Again, not that we can't make shifts. I'm trying to figure out how to meet both expectations.
And we need to wrap this up quickly, Angelica.
So factual information. 82% of the seniors took those two tests. So it's not, yes, 18% of the kids, and those 82% of the kids who did take it are now being cheated because we are not providing the information. Their parents are not getting the information. Nothing is going to change about how, based on these new hard standards with a different framework than we've ever used before. It's the same framework NAEP's been using, the AP's been using. It's a lie for us to say it's something different than what one of these three is, because these are the results. What we want to see is improvement. We want to see kids who aren't near the top getting more help, but to say this is not the truth, there's just nothing that supports that comment, because this is the truth. It's substantiated by a whole lot of other assessments that our kids have been taking.
Well, I'd love to have an hour to debate that with you, because I think you're wrong.
I would love to add to that. I think perhaps some of you don't have any idea we're not releasing test scores. Kids and parents are not going to know what they did. And because of our actions, and you think that this is not going to raise a huge storm in the state, what do they think they're doing up there? This is not good for the state board. And I would, when you talk about the number of students who opted out, they opted out with their feet, they were whipped up to that. There was a lot of publicity going on that was not true, was not right, but, you know, they bought it. And kids love to opt out. I mean, that's the best thing they can do is opt out. I'm ready to offer the motion that we table this, but if we table it, then we're not talking about it till June. And the kids are out of school in June. I just think it's you know.
It's unprofessional. It's just
unprofessional, good word. It just boggles my brain that we would do this. But Angelica, would you perhaps do the motion if you see it there?
Well, I'd love to make a motion.
Go for it. Make a motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we give grades A, B, C, and F.
So you can't change the whole thing like that. You can't, you know. We either release the grades or we don't release the grades. We can't just suddenly come up with a new grade scale.
I don't see why not. I mean, this would be probably more meaningful than...
It probably would be more meaningful to parents than what they'll be getting with that score scale or with that scale. I think they will understand A, B, C, and F.
So I think the feelings are hot enough that we're going to wrap this up.
It's not hot enough.
So I move to table the action on the high school science and social studies recommended cut scores and their associated performance level descriptors for the Colorado Measures of Academic Success and Colorado Alternate Assessment until the June board meeting.
Is there a second? No? No second? You want to sit here and continue?
No, I'll make another motion.
There's no second.
Well, why not take up my motion?
I'll make a substitute motion.
Did we sit here all night?
I've been over at the legislature the last two
You're
weeks.
I
can promise you I can stay all night. I'll make a substitute motion that this lay over until tomorrow, and that we devote at least find time to devote 30 minutes to it and see if staff can come up with some compromise that we might be able to live with that incorporates at least some of the concerns that they've heard. Maybe they can't, but we'll see if they can.
That's a good motion.
I will second it because we just happen to be in the same.
All right, been moved and seconded that we set aside 30 minutes tomorrow, which will not be easy. We've got a very full schedule tomorrow, but we'll find 30 minutes. and try to come to some conclusion. Maybe Joyce will have some suggestions for us. I really think, people, this
stay
is
up
so
all night.
Important. We are, you know, we're just letting ourselves in for a huge firestorm if we don't release test scores this year. And we can talk about the fact that we need to do further study on how to norm them and all that sort of thing. But these tests have been given, and the fact that we won't release them is just huge. With that, we would move on to the next item on the agenda.
Madam Chair?
We have to vote. I'm sorry. Yes. Izzy, would you call the roll?
Steve Durham.
Aye.
Dr. Flores.
Aye.
Jane Goff.
Aye.
Marcia Neal.
Aye.
Pam Masnick.
Aye.
Dr. Scheffel.
Aye.
Dr. Schroeder.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you for the very productive discussion.
So, Marcia, I think I had your book by accident. Sorry.
That's okay.